Hello and welcome to 10 Film Bookcast Lane, the podcast that is supposedly related to Film Bookcast but has pretty much nothing in common except for the fact that it's also called Film Bookcast.
Beautiful. Yeah. So yeah. We're alternate universe.
Alternate universe podcast. This podcast is being recorded in a tiny bunker underneath the ground.
Yep.
It's just me and you and one other guy. He keeps saying the world is ending.
Should we believe him?
I don't know.
We'll find out.
The 10 Film Bookcast Lane is the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who will one day rise through the ranks of podcasting so he can direct his own hit feature.
Wow. That's a lot of confidence. I'm Mike DiCriscio.
Yeah, how you doing today, Mike?
Good. Now that you've read the tea leaves and I know what I'm going to do with my life, I feel pretty happy.
Makes you feel pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you've never listened to 10 Film Bookcast Lane before, I'm going to commit to the title.
Yeah, I can tell.
Essentially, we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever media we've been consuming lately. After that, we'll move on to our featured review. This week, we are reviewing the new film from director Dan Trachtenberg and the sort of sequel, but not really, to Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane. If you didn't already get that from our various jokes regarding 10 Film Bookcast Lane. So Mike, are you ready to move on to some film news?
Yes. Tell me what's been going on in the world, Mike.
Right. Have you been keeping up with any of the news at all?
I like to hear it from you.
Right. That's good. Secondhand news is always the best source of
news. The best news. It's the most true I've heard.
Well, film news this week, we got a few things to mention. The first of which is that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who was originally set to star in and possibly direct the Sandman adaptation that was going on at Warner Brothers. Sandman is a comic book written by Neil Gaiman for DC. And Warner Brothers was trying to make a movie adaptation about this for a while. And then things got shuffled around, ended up over at New Line, which is Warner Brothers' co-division. And now Joseph Gordon-Levitt is leaving the project over creative differences with New Line.
Wow. That's upsetting, because I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I never saw, what was that movie he directed about
Sex Education? Don John?
Yeah, I never saw that.
Yeah, I like Don John. That was a pretty solid movie. Like, it's not great, but it's solid, and it has, like, I felt like Joseph Gordon-Levitt was a pretty solid director for it, and he could do more as he went on. It seems like things for this movie were not going well with New Line. And you know, he had a very lengthy Facebook post about him leaving the project. Mm-hmm. And one of the direct quotes was, "The folks in New Line and I just don't see eye to eye on what makes Sandman special and what a film adaptation could and should be." And so mm-hmm. I took that, and a lot of people took that as translation. They're making a really crappy movie.
Right. Yeah.
And I bailed.
I mean, good for him for getting out, I guess. But that's sad. I've never read those comics, or I'm not familiar with them. So I don't know what the character is about. But hopefully they make a not shitty version. I don't know for fans. I know Neil Gaiman has a very loyal following.
Yeah. He's got a big fan base, and his work has been adapted a few times. Coraline was based on a Neil Gaiman book.
Okay.
And I know there's, the new Starz TV show, American Gods, which is going to be based on his series of novels. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely gonna be more Neil Gaiman in the future for fans to enjoy.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be struggling anytime soon.
yeah, definitely. So that's I did want to bring that up, because that was kind of some of the big, like, the big actual film news past week. Other big film news, and I did want to mention this as well. J.K. Simmons has been cast as Commissioner Gordon in the Justice League movie.
See, this is awesome. One, because more J.K. Simmons at any time is good.
Right, exactly.
That's amazing. but does this mean J.K. Simmons has to wear a hairpiece?
That's a good question. He may have to grow a mustache.
He may have to grow a mustache, which I think he can do.
Although the Gordon on Gotham does not have a mustache, and it's very upsetting.
Well, it's pre-mustache Gordon.
That's exactly the joke that everybody's been saying. Is like, this is the origin story for Gordon's mustache.
Which would
probably be more compelling than most of the stories in Gotham.
That's what I've heard.
Burn.
Yeah, suck on that, Fox.
Yeah. that's pretty big. I think that's great casting. I think he's an awesome choice for Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's crossing the streams. You know, he was originally J. Jonah Jameson in the Spider-Man movies, in the Marvels.
Right.
And now he's in the DC universe as Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah. Although I guess that's a thing I didn't even put that together. Because I was going to say, I don't think we've ever seen J.K. Simmons in a hairpiece. And then,
There it is.
Jonah Jameson does. Yeah. So never mind.
Yeah. And a mustache, too. He might just be playing J. Jonah Jameson in this Justice League movie.
He'll just be yelling for pictures of Batman the whole time.
Yeah, but it won't make any sense because he's the, you know, police Batman. Commissioner.
Yeah. It'll be great.
It actually had me thinking about like other like actors who jumped universes, you know, people who are in like DC movies and Marvel movies, because it's like it's an elite group, you know.
Okay,
I can only off the top of my head I can think of Ryan Reynolds, was in Green Lantern and then he was in Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise it's tough to it's hard to think of other people who've actually like jumped from DC to Marvel and Marvel to DC.
I can't think of any.
Yeah, if you've got any suggestions, listeners, you can feel free to email us at podcast@filmbook.com or tweet at us at mdfilmblog and smithfilmblog.
Mm-hmm.
Plug that.
Good job.
Because otherwise, I mean, like, I can think of people who played more than one comic book character, like Chris Evans, who played Human Torch and then Captain America, but those are both Marvel characters.
He didn't
jump universes.
Can't cross the streams, I guess.
Exactly. Who does know? Indeed. But speaking of J.K. Simmons... and Spider-Man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, looping that back around.
What a good segue.
This past week saw the debut of a new trailer for Captain America Civil War.
Stay down. Final warning. I could do this all day.
All right, I've run out of patience. On the roof!
Hey, everyone.
So I wasn't going to talk about this trailer. We weren't going to bring it up. I don't think either of us were planning on watching it.
Right? Yeah. As we've talked about before, I'm trying to do the Unsullied thing and not watch trailers.
Right, right. But this trailer debuted and set the internet ablaze.
Yeah.
Everyone was talking about this trailer because at the very end of this trailer... Spider-Man appears.
Yeah.
For the first time in the Marvel Universe. This is Tom Holland as Spider-Man. And it's very brief. It's like maybe a 5-second clip.
Yeah.
But it's, I was just thrilled to see him.
it was really, really cool. And I'm kind of glad, at least for the voice, you know, and they went with Tom Holland, who is a young person.
Right. Yeah, he sounds like a young person.
Yeah, that's what they're going, like, committing to actual high school age Spider-Man and Peter Parker.
Right.
So that was cool. That was neat. What'd you think of the eyes, Mike?
The eyes, yeah. So in this trailer, it shows that Spider-Man has eyes that move, like animatronic eyes that, like, get bigger and smaller and however he wants, whatever he wants, I guess. I liked it. You know,
yeah, it looks cool.
I think it does look good. And, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, Deadpool had the moving eyes, so I guess Spider-Man has to have them. But, like, this was absolutely in the works before Deadpool came out.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's animated, so, like, it can't be that hard. It's like, you don't need that much time.
I mean, you probably do.
I meant for the trailer, but yeah.
No, I'm sure, yeah, for the trailer, I guess. But I'm sure, like, it's been in the works for a while. It's not just because Deadpool had the moving eyes that Spider-Man has them.
Right, but I'm on board. I really liked it in Deadpool, and I'm okay with Spider-Man having it because this means the mask can emote in some way.
Yeah, and it also differentiates it from the other two Spider-Men that we've seen over the last 10 years. Like,
exactly, yeah.
I think it was Devin Faraci on Twitter who was saying that, you know, Marvel's so good at what they do that they can make people excited about the third version of Spider-Man that they've gotten in as many years. Like,
right, yeah, that's a good point. I'm interested to see... how it evolves, like the suit and stuff, as we get closer, because this is the first one, and I wonder if this was, you know, and a lot of times stuff in trailers change, don't make it into films and stuff like that.
Right.
If they'll change the suit at all, because it looks kind of flat, which is fine.
Yeah, for the trailer it did, but I saw afterwards like they posted like a high resolution image of the actual suit.
Oh, okay.
And it looks a little bit better. Like, it has more, like, texture to it.
Okay. That's cool. Because, otherwise, I mean, it's not, like, a big deal at all. But, because, you know, we got to tear everything apart. It looked like a flat suit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But, otherwise in that trailer, it was a pretty solid trailer. It's pretty similar to the other trailer that, we've seen already, but it had more, like Avengers action going on. As one very exciting scene that I was pretty stoked to see was, Hawkeye shooting an arrow with Ant-Man on top of it, and Ant-Man kind of like just jumping off and like
hitting stuff. That is total fan service. People have been calling for that for years since they did it on the Avengers animated show. I don't know if it happens in the comics.
I think it does happen in the comics at some point. Yeah.
But people have been begging for that to happen, so I'm glad that they did that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And
we also see some really cool matchups, like we see Scarlet Witch taking down Vision.
Right. Yeah,
and Black Panther chasing down a motorcycle. Like, I think Black Panther may be like the runaway badass in this film.
I really hope so. I think he's like,
I think he will be.
Yeah, I think he will be. And I think they definitely want Black Panther to come off like really well, so that when the Black Panther movie comes out in like 2 years,
right?
You know,
oh, what a crazy sentence.
People are excited. Yeah, people are excited for the Black Panther movie. So anyway, Civil War trailer. Really good. Spider-Man appearance, also really fun. And it's a pretty, like, serious trailer, which I think makes the Spider-Man appearance all the better, because it's, like, it's a pretty lighthearted, like, Spider-Man, like, just popping in, stealing Captain America's shield and going, hey, everybody.
Yeah, like, doing his Spider-Man thing.
Doing his Spider-Man thing, and that was cool. And, yeah, it's just fun to watch, and I'm excited. Like, I'm excited for Civil War. Like, it's,
yes,
it's coming out. You know, it's weird. Batman vs. Superman's coming out in 2 weeks, and I'm interested. Like, I'm eager to see Batman and Superman facing off. I love both those characters, but, you know, it's Civil War is basically the same movie. It's Captain America versus Iron Man.
Yep.
But I'm way more invested in that movie.
And probably going to be infinitely better.
Oh, yeah. I think it just has a much better shot of being much better.
I would agree.
Yeah, so that's the Captain America Civil War trailer featuring Spider-Man. That said, I'm pretty much done with Civil War trailers at this point, I feel like. Like, I don't... The movie's out in 2 months.
Yeah, I hope they don't put more out.
I'm sure they will. They usually do. Like, by this time, they start, like, ramping up the trailers and stuff like that. So, I was actually surprised they showed off Spider-Man in the trailer. I figured they might save him for the movie.
I didn't think they were going to release any images or anything of him. But, it's cool that they did, I guess.
Yeah, no, and it looks good, and the appearance is a lot of fun to watch. But, yeah, I thought, like it still would have been really cool just to, like, not even be sure that Spider-Man was going to be in the movie.
Yeah, I honestly was thinking he might be like the after credits scene or something like that.
Yeah, but it seems like, and I think he will, I think his role will be pretty small in the movie. Like, I don't think he'll be a huge part of the movie, because like Tom Holland was cast like halfway through filming of Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, it definitely, the scene that happens in the trailer seemed like it's probably pretty close to the end.
Could be, I don't know. I guess we'll find out in 2 months.
Exactly. This is why I don't like trailers, because now I assume I know what happens at the, like, what's going on at the end of this film.
Well, I don't think Civil War trailer really gives that much away. It's not like the Batman vs Superman trailers, which basically give you the entire movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Captain America isn't giving away story beats or anything, but like
moments. It's giving away moments.
Yeah, there's like a giant battle at an airport at the end, I assume, between everyone, and Spider-Man shows up there. So, like, now I know that, and so that's cool.
All right, well, that's the Captain America Civil War trailer featuring Spider-Man, so let's move on to our discussions, Mike.
All right.
So why don't you discuss what you want to discuss? Discuss away.
Discuss away?
Discuss away. Swing away, Johnny.
Thanks, Joaquin Phoenix and or Mel Gibson. I don't remember who says it.
Is there a character named Johnny in that movie? I don't think there was.
Well, that's what he tells him at the end, swing away.
Right, yeah, I know, swing away, but I could not remember what his name was, so I said Johnny.
I don't know. Anyway, so I'm not going to be discussing Signs. I'll be discussing Zootopia.
Although we could be discussing Signs.
We could do Sky. You're right, we could do Signs. Now all I can think of is Joaquin Phoenix yelling, look away, vamoose, or whatever he says. So Zootopia, anyway. New Disney movie? I don't even... It's Pixar or Disney?
Disney Animation.
Disney Animation.
Yeah,
see not, how not prepared Pixar. I am? Okay, I'll be honest. Yeah. I went to see Zootopia after Happy Hour, so...
So take it on a tone, that's a very sad sentence.
It is, but I was with a bunch of people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm assuming you're with a group of people.
I was with a bunch of people, so, like, it's less sad. But Zootopia, it's a story of a rabbit who wants to be... a cop, even though she's tiny, and rabbits can't be cops in this world, apparently. Wait, hold on.
I thought you were just going to be like, rabbits can't be cops, but you weren't going to say in this world.
In this world.
Like that was drawing the line for you. Like, rabbits can't be cops.
That's too far.
This movie is ridiculous.
No, that's not where I'm going with that. Where I'm going with that is that this film, unlike most of Disney animation films and even Pixar films and stuff, is pretty upfront and not heavy-handed, but like very obvious about what its message is. And like, it's a pretty clear allegory for racism and a lot of stuff that like is going on now. Yeah. Which is interesting. Like, it's the story kind of revolves around predators have been going savage in this film, you know, because in Zootopia, predators and prey live in harmony, you know, wolves and stuff, everyone lives together in the city.
Right.
And the predators have been going savage, and then they need to figure out why, what's happening. And it is very much about, you know, perceptions and playing on fears and politicians using that to gain power and like a lot of really interesting, serious stuff, which is kind of out of character for these types of films. Like, they usually deal with, you know, emotional and real situations and things like that for right. kids. But this one is like a pretty obvious and dark and serious situation that the film is handling,
right?
And it handles it well. It's still really funny and lighthearted. I know Jason Bateman's the fox. I don't remember who's the voice.
Jennifer Goodwin is the voice.
Jennifer Goodwin, yeah. Their chemistry and the voice acting they do is really good, and they're fun to watch together. They make a really funny pair. So it's definitely worth seeing, and it's got a lot of, you know, adult references and stuff like that, which is always good for these movies. You know, these kinds of movies are always enjoyable for that reason.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think people should check it out.
Yeah, I've been excited. I haven't seen it yet, but I've been pretty excited to see it. It's got like a 99 in Rotten Tomatoes. People love it. Like, it's been getting phenomenal reviews, and it's just the trailers look like terrific. Like, I remember seeing the I hadn't really seen much about it. I'd seen like teasers here and there, but I remember the trailer came out with Star Wars, where it's just the two, like the fox and the rabbit character at the DMV with the sloths.
With the sloths.
And they just play that entire scene in the trailer. Yeah. That is the trailer. Yeah. And I remember how big of a hit that trailer was with my audience. And like, when it first started, I was like, ah, here we go, Disney, like, whatever. But as it was going on, like, it was genuinely really funny.
Yeah, and that scene is great in the film. Right. and there's a lot of stuff like that, like jokes about them being animals. You know, it's not to the extent of BoJack Horseman-esque, like, stuff like that happening.
Right.
But they do, you know, have jokes about, like, the sloths move in slow motion and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's a good time.
All right, well, let's move on to let's move on to my discussions now. Unless you have more to say about Zootopia.
No, I don't.
All right. so I have two movies I wanted to talk about. Two movies that I caught up with from last year that I really enjoyed. The first of which is Straight Outta Compton, which is the NWA biopic that came out last year, directed by F. Gary Gray. And I gotta say, the first like hour and a half of this movie is, but taken on its own, would be like one of the strongest films of last year. I mean, it's like fantastic. The first hour and a half. I think the last hour, this is a 2.5 hour movie. I think the last hour kind of drags it down. Okay. And there's like good material there, but it just feels very extraneous to what the movie was about up to that point.
Right.
But again, like when it's focused strictly on like NWA's formation, the making of the Straight Outta Compton album and the following tour, and specifically the racial tension in that time period and the stuff that like eerily mirrors today's world. It's terrific. Like it's really powerful. It's really intense. And, you know, the music's fantastic and, you know, it falls into familiar biopic beats. Like it feels like it needs to tell way more than it actually needs to. Yeah. So in that last hour of the movie, like you see Dre working with Snoop Dogg, or you see, Ice Cube writing Friday is a scene in the movie.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's, and you know, Dre and Ice Cube were producers on this movie as well. And so they come off looking pretty good. In Straight Outta Compton. And like it did create controversy. Like it basically, I remember like a couple of the women that, Dre had beaten, came out and said like, this movie is ridiculous because the movie does not portray any of that, while this is going on, and stuff like that. It is a very streamlined, very like positive version of NWA, that is being shown. And it shows you like the pitfalls of the group, but it like leaves out the personal lives of, like the negative aspects of the personal lives of the members of the group and kind of focuses on the positive. And to that end, I mean, the movie is still very powerful and still works very well. But it basically, for me, I feel like everything up through NWA kind of dissolving when Ice Cube leaving, like, because Ice Cube leaves after the Straight Outta Compton tour and does his own like solo career while NWA does another album. Everything up to that point is phenomenal. Like, it's just incredible to watch. Music's fantastic. The filmmaking is terrific. It's incredibly strong. And all the performances all around are really good. I think O'Shea Jackson Jr., who plays Ice Cube's son, or no, who is Ice Cube's son in real life, plays Ice Cube in the movie. And he's fantastic. Like, he literally just looks and sounds like Ice Cube, like, from back. And that makes sense, because he's a son.
He's a son. Yeah, that's kind of like a weird, cool, I don't know how I feel about that, but it's awesome.
It's really good. And the guy who, I forget his name, but the guy who plays Eazy-E is also really good. The movie does end with Eazy-E's death, and again, I feel like it's too far into past what the movie was about originally.
Right.
But again, there's a lot of strong material there. It feels like it's a different movie at that point.
Yeah. It becomes the Dr. Dre and Ice Cube show.
Kind of. Like after NWA basically splits up, it kind of just kind of focuses on their three different, like, what the three of them are up to at different times in their careers. And it's like, I don't know, that wasn't really what the movie was about before. And it's, like, yeah. I get that it's supposed to be about the entirety of NWA as, like, a group.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it doesn't, it doesn't really fit with the rest of the movie. And I think biopics fall into that a lot. Like, there's not...
Yeah.
You know, there's not a clear-cut way to do a music biopic, but I feel like, or a biopic in general, I feel like most of the time biopics are usually best when they're focused on a very specific period in that person's life.
Right.
Like, for example, Steven Spielberg's Lincoln was only on, like, the last 4 months of Lincoln's life.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Still worth it.
That's it. Yeah, still worth it. It's still a lot of really great stuff in here. And, you know, this movie was basically shut out of the Oscars this year, and that was a big controversy.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, this movie probably should have been up for some Oscars. There's a lot of great stuff here, even though it does kind of fall flat towards the end.
There was a thing going around online that somebody recut the trailer to make it about Paul Giamatti's character.
I didn't watch it. I heard about that, though, yeah.
It was pretty great. It was, like, all about, you know, this one record producer takes struggling kids off the street. And, like, this makes it, like, this really heartfelt movie about Paul Giamatti. It was wonderful.
It's really good. No, yeah. And Paul Giamatti's been making, like, a second career out of playing record producers, which is a lot of fun. Because he does it here. And he was also, in like, last year also, he was in Love and Mercy as a Brian Wilson's record producer.
Right.
And he did the same thing in Rock of Ages, where he was the record producer for Tom Cruise's character.
Yep.
So I feel like, you know, he's getting typecast into this very specific role.
It's that and Seismologists.
Yes.
You'll feel it on the East Coast.
You will feel it on the East Coast.
That's from San Andreas, for anyone who isn't sure.
He makes that movie worth watching, San Andreas.
Yes, true. That's totally a true statement.
And then the other movie I want to talk about today was Mistress America, which is the new movie by Noah Baumbach and his newest collaboration with Greta Gerwig, who he worked with on Frances Ha. Mistress America is about a college freshman who starts hanging out with her soon-to-be sister-in-law, and hijinks ensue. And
that sounds like every Noah Baumbach movie.
Yeah, well, he came out with two movies last year, one of which we reviewed, While We Were Young.
Right.
And this was his other one. And, you know, they both explore pretty similar themes about kind of like 30-something people versus 20-something people. Mm-hmm. I think this is the stronger one.
Okay.
And I liked While We Were Young a lot, but I think this one is stronger. I totally love this movie. I think it's just so much fun. It's basically just a fast-paced screwball comedy. And it just keeps escalating, like, all the situations that happen. And there's a sadness at the core of this movie that I found very compelling, but it's wedged in so many great jokes that it's easy to miss. And, you know, there's so many memorable characters. There's a lot of witty dialogue. It feels like I would need to watch it, like, several more times in order to catch all the jokes. Yeah, there's so much going on a lot of the time. Like, literally, like, if you stopped paying attention for 5 seconds, you would miss, like, five lines.
Wow.
Like, it just goes very fast. Yeah, so that's Mistress America. I just wanted to bring that up because it's really good. Now, I will probably try to watch it again at some point soon.
I feel like that's on Netflix. I feel like I just saw it.
It may be. I got it through their disc plan.
Oh, okay.
As well as Straight Outta Compton, the same thing. But it could be on Netflix relatively soon. It seems like the kind of thing that might pop up there.
Yeah. Well, keep an eye out.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our discussions, Mike. I think you know what time it is.
Is it review time?
That it is.
All right, cool.
It's time for us to take a trip to 10 Cloverfield Lane. Children behave. That's what they say when we're together. And watch how you play. They don't understand. And so we're running just as fast as we can.
Something's coming.
All right, that was from the trailer for 10 Cloverfield Lane. It's the new film from Dan Trachtenberg, written by Josh Campbell, Matt Stukin, and Damien Chazelle. Damien Chazelle, do you know who that is, Mike?
I believe what was the other movie he originally made? He left to make Whiplash, right?
He directed Whiplash.
Yes.
Wrote and directed Whiplash. He also wrote Grand Piano, which is an amazing movie. Have you seen Grand Piano? Did I show you that movie?
No, but you've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, it's so good. And this movie actually reminded me of Grand Piano in the way it built tension, but I'll get to that later. Okay. 10 Cloverfield Lane stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead, John Goodman, and John Gallagher Jr. The IMDb plot synopsis reads, after getting in a car accident, a woman is held in a shelter with two men who claim the outside world is affected by a widespread chemical attack. So 10 Cloverfield Lane is a movie that was just basically unveiled 2 months ago.
Yes.
Like, nobody knew this movie existed. I knew that there was a movie called Valencia that Dan Trachtenberg was making with Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman. Because that was the working title of this movie, and like, I knew he was making it with Bad Robot. But they basically unveiled the movie, like, it was the first anybody had seen of it, and they released the title was 10 Cloverfield Lane, making it tenuously related to Cloverfield, the 2008 monster movie. And we talked about that for a little bit when the trailer came out and they first announced this movie just a couple months ago. And this is the directorial debut of Dan Trachtenberg of The Totally Rad Show.
Yes.
Which is very cool. I know you're a big fan of The Totally Rad Show, Mac.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome that this has happened for him. And I can foresee it being a springboard for a very successful career.
So yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to watch a podcast of him talking about movies in his friend's garage. And now he's making movies with J.J. Abrams. So.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, that's an insane story. So that's really cool. And yeah, this movie actually did very well at the box office. Like, it was a pretty big hit for Paramount. Dan Trachtenberg is like a talent to watch now. People are like looking at him, and like people are saying, like, Marvel should be sending him a script or something, like, in the near future. Like,
that would be insane.
Can you imagine how like Jeff Cannata would react to when Dan Trachtenberg like directs like Marvel's Runaways or something? Like,
right? He would lose his mind.
Oh man. Are you a fan of Cloverfield, Mike?
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen it since the theaters. I probably have seen it like a couple times after that. But I remember seeing it, and I know I've talked about I don't like found footage movies very much, but for some reason I enjoyed Cloverfield. I don't know. It was good.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen Cloverfield in a very long time either, but I liked it a lot.
I like the, if I remember, it's kind of got like a sort of silly, you know, it knows what it is kind of thing. Going on, and I like it. It was good, and it's like about New York and stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah, but you say you don't like found footage movies, but Cloverfield was the one that really like kicked off the wave of found footage movies.
That's true. The most recent,
I mean, like there was Blair Witch Project back in '99, which kind of kicked off like kind of popularized it, but I feel like Cloverfield really like kicked it into high gear. Like after Cloverfield came out, just like anytime there was like a horror movie that needed to be made on the cheap.
Right. That's like, a good point. Yeah.
It was a found footage movie. Like that's right after Cloverfield, you had like Paranormal Activity coming out.
Right.
And you had like the Quarantine movies and you had like a couple other movies, and sometimes they were good ones. Sometimes most of the time they were pretty lousy, but yeah, it's the way it goes sometimes.
So what else about Cloverfield?
I was going to say, I mean, Cloverfield is a movie that I liked a lot. I haven't seen it since, I think I saw it on DVD once after it left theaters, and that's probably the last time I saw it, but I liked it a lot back then. And then this movie was announced, and, you know, it's sort of related to Cloverfield, but it's not really.
Yeah.
As we've both watched this movie. I mean, do you think this movie should be called Cloverfield? Like, do you think the word Cloverfield should be in the title?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Sure. I think we'll talk about it in spoilers, I assume.
Right.
But I like that idea of having sort of an anthology umbrella for these films that like are tenuously related to each other. Like there's sort of
they have like similar themes, but they're not like, based on the same story kind of thing.
Right. I mean, it's what we talk about it, the Marvelization of everything now. So like, sure, let's have a connected horror movie universe.
Well, the thing is, it's not really connected. It's just the word Cloverfield is the only connection this movie really has.
Yeah, that's true.
To the other movie. But I do like the idea of like, I think J.J. Abrams called it like a Twilight Zone-esque film franchise.
Right.
Where like each movie would kind of be like a new original story just under the Cloverfield banner.
Right, exactly.
And I think it's a good idea. Like, it's a way to get people to go see original stories in the theater, just called Cloverfield. Like,
I'm okay with that. And especially, I really like the idea of this being I don't know if they're going to do it going forward, but, like, for new filmmakers to use this as a way to...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, Cloverfield, the first one was directed by Matt Reeves, his directorial debut. And he went on to, you know, direct... Let Me In, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and is currently filming War for the Planet of the Apes.
If this is used, you know, with the backing of Bad Robot to springboard...
Yeah, get, like, really talented filmmakers, give them their directorial debut. Like, it's a really cool idea, a really cool concept. Yeah,
and I really like that. That's really cool. And they kind of talked about that in... they were on... J.J. Abrams and Dan Trachtenberg were on the most recent... Nerdist podcast, and they talked about how Kathleen Kennedy and Steven Spielberg influenced J.J. Abrams and kind of helped him get his start, and now he wants to repay that, and, you know, he's helping Dan, and he helped Matt Reeves, and he wants to use, you know, his power now to help younger people like he was helping.
Yeah, so J.J. Abrams is basically, like, one of those powerful people in Hollywood now. He just made Star Wars.
Yeah, now that he made the space movie, as he calls it.
The space movie.
So, yeah, I think that's a really cool and noble thing for him to do to start this.
No, definitely very neat. So that all said, Mike, I mean, what was your reaction to 10 Cloverfield Lane? And we'll get into spoilers pretty quickly because I think there's a lot of stuff that has not been revealed via trailers or anything. So just give me like your basic – we'll do some basic things about the movie and then get into spoilers.
Jump spoilers. Okay. Yeah, well, Dan Trachtenberg just tweeted a couple days ago that – it was a conscious decision, I think, by Bad Robot or somebody. I don't remember who made the decision to not release a full trailer, to only make teaser trailers.
Right.
And they're definitely, you know, went to lengths to keep the story under wraps, which I like, that's why I avoid trailers. So absolutely. I appreciate that.
Had you seen the trailers for this movie before you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I had seen one or two of them. But so going into it, I didn't really know what to expect, and it... blew me away in a lot of ways. Like it was very simple in like the best way.
Okay.
Where it's, let's put three people in a tiny bunker and one of them is crazy maybe. And like, what would that be like? What is that like to be, you know, kind of utterly powerless against that character, John Goodman's character.
Right.
In a lot of ways. And, that really resonated with me for a while. That gave me a lot to think about, but I thought it was very tense, very super suspenseful, and I like that they're fully embracing and touting it, the Twilight Zone connection or comparison, and I think that is totally warranted for this film. It Yeah. It really felt like a 2-hour Twilight or an hour and a half or whatever it ended up being, Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I felt this was like a really effective thriller. It's a very confident debut for Dan Trachtenberg.
Yes.
You know, I think all three performances are very good. I think John Goodman has the meatiest role. Like, he really, like, dives into it. And he's constantly playing the audience about whether or not he should be trusted. The movie does that really effectively. Like, it kind of it keeps adding more and more details to the story of the movie and to his character's backstory. And, you know, at one point you'll think, oh, like, he's crazy. He's an insane person. Like, he should not be trusted. And then 5 minutes later, he'd be like, maybe he's not that bad.
And then he gives like a really heartfelt moment, and it's like, oh,
and then
God.
You know, and then it just keeps like building on top of each other. Like, it goes back and forth. It's insane.
Yeah.
You know, and the movie builds very well, like, because of that. Like, it kind of just focuses on those characters, and it builds very well. And there's tense moments throughout. And then it just basically unleashes in like the last half hour and goes like totally bonkers.
Right. It goes nuts. It's yeah. And there's some like pretty, you know, beautiful visual storytelling going on. Like, even in the opening 5 minutes or whatever, where it's Mary Elizabeth Winstead's frantically packing and, like, we don't know who she is, what's going on. And, you know, we see her in her frenzy. We see her grab a bottle of liquor. So, like, that is apparently a priority for her. And also then camera lingers on a set of keys and a wedding ring, and we don't have to know anything else that she's leaving those behind. And we have her whole backstory.
Yeah.
And it was so well done.
Very effective.
And we don't see that kind of stuff in a whole lot of movies recently. You know, with these big blockbuster crazy movies, that type of stuff isn't done.
Right.
So it's nice to see that. And that opening sequence really was like, yes, I was like, so proud of, like, Dan.
Sold you on that one.
Yeah, so proud of him.
Yeah, no, one of the other things about this movie, I was just really happy that it gave Mary Elizabeth Winstead like a real spotlight to shine.
Yeah,
because she's really good, and I always really liked her. And like, she was in Scott Pilgrim, she was Ramona Flowers,
right,
in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And like, I feel like she hasn't been in that much since then.
Yeah, you
know? I remember she was in a movie called Smash with Aaron Paul a couple years ago, where she had a very good performance in that movie. But otherwise, like, I feel like I have not. She hasn't been around that much, and so this is like, you know, she's getting a lead role here. It's very exciting. Like, and she does a great job with it. Like, I think she's really good.
Yeah,
in this movie, definitely. Well.
Yeah, she did a great job. And I'll give, you know, Dan Trachtenberg and J.J. Abrams on the Nerdist podcast, They talked about how she is the, you know, she's the main character for the film. You know, she's the perspective we have for the film.
Right.
And they talked about Lindsay Weber, who's produced the film and works at Bad Robot. And they said that Lindsay Weber was on set every day there to make sure that they got the, you know, women's perspective correct. And I think it shines through in this film. Like, they did a good job with that.
Right.
And, you know, I'm glad they were conscious enough to say, we don't know what this would be like. You know, we're men, so let's have this woman, like, you know.
Right.
I think they deserve some credit for, and Lindsay Weber deserves a lot of credit for that, for making sure that, I don't remember.
That it feels right, basically. Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah.
Michelle.
Exactly.
Her character in the movie.
There we go. Yeah. Because that situation, I was talking with a friend on Twitter about that, you know, she went and saw it with a guy friend, and the guy didn't feel that, like, it was tense at all. Like, he didn't care. Like, it didn't work for him. And my friend said that, coming from a female perspective, that it's like the most tense a film could be, where it's a woman trapped in the bunker with this crazy, violence prone man.
Right.
And that's like a very real danger for a lot of women and men too. But like, you know, so that, I think that is another layer on top of the Twilight Zone stuff that this film deserves credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I mean, there's definitely a lot more we can talk about in spoilers, right?
Yes.
So
yeah.
Let's. I think we should do that. Let's move on into spoilers for 10 Cloverfield Lane, starting right now. All right. Spoilers for 10 Cloverfield Lane, starting right now. So one of the things that John Goodman keeps bringing up in the movie is that aliens is basically...
Right.
Right. He keeps bringing up aliens, like, oh, yeah, aliens are definitely on an attack, or, like, they've definitely done this or whatever. Yeah. And you know, for a while, the movie makes you guess about whether the world actually ended.
Yes.
Or whether there was some kind of attack, because John Goodman says there was, but he's just some creepy person who kidnapped Mary Elizabeth Winstead, as for all you know, at the beginning of the movie. And then, you know, John Gallagher Jr. comes in, and he says, like, oh, no, I saw an attack. I saw, like, this blinding white light. And, you know, once he says that, it seems like maybe the world actually did end, but then there's, like, other things that make you think maybe not. Like, you don't really know what you're supposed to do, who you're supposed to trust in that scenario. But the movie basically confirms that there was definitely an attack as Michelle tries to run away from the bunker and sees a woman whose, like, skin is falling off.
Yeah.
trying to get into the bunker.
Yeah, that was pretty... I wasn't expecting that.
definitely a surprise, sure.
Yeah, well, because the way... I mean, John Goodman's delivery of the line where he says, oh, you know, it's possibly the Russians nuclear attacked.
Right, he says it very matter-of-factly, like very nonchalantly.
Or it's the Martians. And it was like, what? which is, you know, a really great moment. And then the way John Gallagher Jr.'s character describes it, it sounds like a nuclear attack, like a blinding bright flash. Like, you know. So it's like, okay, maybe the Russian, whatever, we were nuked. And then we see this woman whose, like, skin is all melty and gross. And she's, like, smashing her forehead on the window. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, bad things have happened.
Yeah, and you still don't know what exactly happened. You just know that something bad is happening that is causing people's skin to fall off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, so that, like, that moment happens, and it makes you, like, it makes you kind of trust Goodman again.
Right. Right? It's like they need this bunker, yeah.
Like, they need the bunker. Like, it makes it, like, the world actually did end. He did actually technically save Michelle from the car crash.
Yeah.
Like, and brought her to the bunker that he caused. Yeah. And later on, you find out that he did cause the car crash.
Yeah.
Or was that before that happened?
No, he explains that after.
He explains that after. Okay. Yeah. He did cause the car crash, and he seems to express regret over it.
Yeah. That's a very heartfelt, like, human moment for him.
Yeah. But then, you know, the movie keeps going back and forth. And so it seems like he did, in fact, abduct Michelle, and he's, in fact, abducted people before.
Right.
Right. He abducted this girl that Emmett went to school with or something.
Yeah.
And kind of uses them as a substitute for his own daughter, who left with his wife several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the movie plays these twists, it just keeps the audience guessing, like, every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like very quick.
And it shifts your alignment every time. Like, it's really effective. It's really well done.
Yeah. Then the, that moment when, you know, John Goodman shows Michelle the picture, and he's like, oh, he's explaining Meg, and they had the joke about, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she would say French. And, like, it's another very human moment.
Yeah.
About his family and his daughter and his loss, and, like,
right,
you know, he's clearly a very broken man. And then we find out that picture was a girl who was kidnapped, and, like, he probably killed her. That moment with them talking with Emmett and Michelle discussing that.
Right, when Emmett says, like, oh, that's not Michelle, and she's like, what? Yeah.
She's wearing the t-shirt, and there's, like, that Polaroid. Ugh, I don't know. There's a lot of very, like, gross, unsettling things going on in that.
Yeah, like, most movies build themselves off of, like, one twist. Like, a lot of movies will build themselves off, like, one twist, and this movie builds itself off, like, 10. Like, there's...
Yes. Yes,
like, every few minutes, there's, a big twist, and it's like, oh, my God, like, that changes my entire perception of what's happening right now.
Right, and I do like that it the twists aren't going in new directions every time. It's like whether the twists are going back and forth between trusting or not trusting John Goodman's character.
Yeah, exactly. But the big point of no return for John Goodman's character is when he kills John Gallagher Jr. Kills Emmett. Yeah, in a very shocking scene. Did not see that coming at all.
I was so not ready for that. And it's beautiful.
It was insane. That was intense. And that's about the time where that's in the last half hour of the movie where everything just kind of starts ramping up really fast.
Right. Yep. That's the edge. That's where it doesn't come back from that.
Yeah.
I love the idea of Emmett and Michelle. She has the idea. She's a fashion designer. We learn. And she has the idea to make a hazmat suit out of the shower curtain.
Right.
Which I love that she uses John. They show her grab like John Good, he's got a bookshelf and she grabs like the How to Survive the Apocalypse book off the shelf. Like they're using his own paranoia against him in that. And she's like following the instructions of how to make it.
Right.
Beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. Very good.
And then, I don't know.
But I did want to talk about the ending of the movie because, after he kills, Emmett, that's basically the point where Michelle kind of like, basically she has to get out. Like she knows she has to leave, right. She gets the hazmat suit ready and, makes her way out of the bunker, gets like basically burns John Goodman alive.
Yep.
But then he's still like, and he's like, she's running through the bunker. You see Emmett's like dead body kind of like dissolving in the acid. And then she burns, slams John Goodman into the acid and like burns him alive. And then, like runs upstairs, and then you see like the knife that John Goodman has like going through the vents that she's crawling through.
Yep.
As he's like dying. It's insane. It's like I thought we were done with John Goodman, and then it just kept coming back.
Yeah.
But then like she gets out of the bunker, the entire thing explodes.
Yep.
And then gets out only to find that there are aliens attacking. And the last like 10-15 minutes of the movie or so are her like fighting off this alien spaceship.
Yeah,
and that, this one alien creature that's attacking her on ground level.
Right. Yeah, that was a moment of beautiful moment. There's a lot of amazing sound engineering going on, like sound mixing in this film in general. But that moment when she's got the hazmat suit on, and we pretty much only hear her panting for that whole. At least when she first comes out and she's like running through the field and, you know, we only hear her panting in the hazmat suit and she stops and she sees geese fly overhead. And then she's like, what? Everything's supposed to be dead. And she pulls the hazmat suit off. And all of a sudden we hear all the crickets and birds.
Yeah, whoosh
and,
like, of sound.
This whoosh of like wildlife. That was like a really powerful moment.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I also do want to mention that, the ending pays off the liquor bottle that she takes at the beginning of the movie very well.
Very well. Better than anyone could have hoped.
Like I didn't expect them to address it again. Like, it was just kind of a thing that happened at the beginning of the movie. She took it. And then at the end, like, it becomes a Molotov cocktail. And it's like, oh, my God.
This Chekhov's scotch bottle.
Yeah. Like, this movie felt like it was ahead of my thoughts, like, every step of the way. Like, every time I thought, like, I could maybe conceive what's happening, the movie took a left turn that was way better than whatever I thought could have happened.
Yes, absolutely. And for a movie like this, it needs to do that because these kinds of suspenseful thriller films that if you figure it out, the movie's over. Like when you as an audience member are like, oh, I bet this is what's going to happen. And then if you're right, you feel kind of robbed. Like, what was the point of the movie then? And I like that every 10 minutes or so, I'm like, this is what's going to happen. Oh, no, I was wrong. Like, every 10 minutes that happens. Ugh. And it's great. But yeah, when she comes out of the bunker and we see, oh, no, yep, it was aliens. I was like, oh, right, Cloverfield.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think of the ending of this movie? Because, like, as she leaves the bunker, because that's, like, most people have pretty positive on this movie, but I've seen some that are like not a big fan of the ending because it's very different from the rest of the movie that precedes it.
Yeah, it becomes very much a action sequence for the last 20 minutes or so.
Right.
But it's very much within character for her to be able to do all those things. I mean, she does some pretty crazy, very clever, like making the Molotov cocktail, like doing all that stuff.
Yeah, and it definitely seems like a lot of it was luck as well. Like, it seems like
it's a lot of luck. But even immediately, the first scene when she's in the bunker and she wakes up, she immediately takes the IV hook and gets her phone. So we already like, and she hides stuff. She lights the stuff in the vent. Like, she's already very situationally clever with these kinds of things. So like, it's within her character to suddenly be making Molotov cocktails and MacGyvering stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I like that she doesn't just all of a sudden become like this super heroine, but I was okay with it. It's a Cloverfield movie. So like, it's, you know, like, well, it tells you what it is in,
like,
the title.
That's the thing. We didn't really know how to define a Cloverfield movie at this point.
Right.
Like, we just had the movie Cloverfield. It was a monster movie. Mm-hmm. And now we had 10 Cloverfield Lane, which up to this point was like a very small scale psychological thriller set in this, like, a bunker with three characters. And suddenly there's monsters like that she's fighting.
That's true. It is a pretty big jump. But talking about in John Goodman's character, he mentions that he was in the Navy and he's like was monitoring satellite activity or something weird.
Yeah, I mean, the movie continually mentions the fact that monsters may exist and, like, aliens may exist as well.
Right.
And so it doesn't feel out of place to me that they were there. It becomes a different movie for those last 10 minutes or so.
Yes. Well, what I was going to say, though, is I remember the original Cloverfield was one of the first to have, like, a viral marketing campaign where
it was huge.
Yeah. They set up websites about companies in the movie and, like, all this stuff. And I remember, because after I saw the movie, I was like, I gotta do all these things, like, look at all this stuff after I saw the first Cloverfield. And I remember there being something about a satellite company having to do with why the monster came to Earth in Cloverfield. So I kind of forgot about all that, but then when they started talking about satellites in 10 Cloverfield Lane, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, it kind of was enough for me to link the two movies into this universe of, like, whatever's going on in New York was going on in this film.
You think, like, the stuff that's happening in Cloverfield is happening, like, at the same time in 10 Cloverfield Lane?
I think so, yeah. I think that's what's going on. I don't know.
I feel like it's just, like, they're just two anthology. I feel like they're completely unrelated, like, practically different universes as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's fine. We can have different opinions. Yeah. I guess we'll see what happens if they make another Cloverfield, when they make another Cloverfield film, since it was a success.
It seems like, this was a fairly big hit. Like, it's not a runaway success by any means, but, like, it's did very solid business at the box office, and it seems like they want to make more. I know there's another, like, secretive bad robot project that's, like, in the works called, like, God's Particle or something, and people think that might be, like, the next Cloverfield movie that they're doing. But I guess we'll have to find out.
We'll wait and see. And then the very last moment, what did you think of
it? I loved it. The final shot of this movie, I think it's a perfect completion of her arc.
Oh, yeah.
In this movie. Because, like, she has that whole, like, monologue, like, she has the heartfelt moment with John Gallagher Jr. where they kind of both discuss their backstories earlier in the movie. And she talks about how, she's always been somebody who runs away from her problems because it's much easier to do that instead of somebody who kind of faces the hard challenges. And even though she knows that she can help, like, she's, like you said, she's very situationally very clever and is very talented at what she does. And so at the end of this movie, she hears, like, the radio contact and, like, saying, there's a safe space in Baton Rouge, but if anybody can help, they need to be in Houston, right? There's a split in the road. It's conveniently, there's a sign that says Baton Rouge and Houston.
Yeah. Which I wanted to, meant to look up, like, on a map if that, like, is, like, if that highway would have that kind of turn in it.
I feel like it almost definitely wouldn't, but.
Yeah, like, are those near each other that they would have a sign like that? Like,
but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And, you know, she stays there for a second, she contemplates what she's going to do, and then she moves over to Houston where she can be of use. And then the movie ends, and I think that was a perfect final shot to end the movie on. Like, I think that really works.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really, it was really good. I don't know. I really like this movie. And now I'm just thinking about how silly. I didn't even realize it during the film, but at that very final battle, she's wearing a rubber ducky.
You didn't think about that during the
film? Like, I didn't even think about it. I was so involved in what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely noticed that during the movie.
Yeah, that she's wearing a rubber ducky. Because
it was funny. It was a funny visual. And I think it was meant to be. Like, it's not. Oh, like, yeah. all right. I mean, if that's, I think it sounds like we were both pretty big fans of the movie, Mike.
Yeah. I enjoyed this a lot.
Awesome. Yeah. So, it's 10 Cloverfield Lane. Definitely worth checking out and, you know, support Dan Trachtenberg, the Holy Rad Show. It's making its way to the top.
Coming next, one day.
Alex Albrecht's going to direct, 11 Cloverfield Lane. And
oh man. What if that's what they, how they name all the movies?
Probably won't be. I mean, I feel like they can't because, it's like, if they see the sequel to this movie and it's called 11 Cloverfield Lane, and it's just Mary Elizabeth Winstead going to the next house over. Like, that might not be good.
That might not be good. Yeah, although I guess they're, whatever. We can talk about it later.
What?
I was going to say, they kind of, like, break the fourth wall in a weird way when she is driving out of the...
Oh, and the mailbox falls down.
She crashes through the mailbox and it, like, rolls over to show the address as 10 Cloverfield.
Right.
That's what?
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
Gives you a reason why this movie's called 10 Cloverfield Lane.
I guess. That's true.
But anyway, yeah. So we were both big fans of the movie. Definitely worth checking out at the theater this weekend or upcoming weekends.
Did you? I have a question I wanted to ask you, actually. Did you have a big audience? How did the audience react when you saw it?
Pretty sizable audience. Seemed like people liked it.
Okay. I was just wondering.
What about you?
There were like four of us in the theater, so like it wasn't like this. I feel like this kind of movie is meant for groups, you know, like this weird, creepy suspense, tension thing. It was fine. I mean, it didn't detract from the film at all. I was just interested.
Okay. I seen people dug it. It's actually gotten an interesting like online response because a lot of people are like, I went to this movie expecting Cloverfield and it's nothing like Cloverfield, kind of thing.
Right. I guess so.
Which. I guess that's true, but at the same time, do you think this is a better movie than Cloverfield? It's hard for me to say because I haven't seen Cloverfield in eight years.
That's what I was going to say. I would lean towards yes, but I also haven't watched Cloverfield in a long time.
I feel like this is a movie that I could see myself watching again.
Yeah. This is the type of movie that I would, probably own. Like this isn't that kind of. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So definitely, we're both big fans, as I've said twice now.
We'll end on this one, I swear. Yeah.
So definitely check it out. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. If you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I stream our games on twitch.tv/geonerd79. And I'm on Letterboxd now because Mike made me. or strongly suggested that I have it. Right. And I think it's MD Film Blog on there also.
Probably.
Don't remember.
You can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and on Letterboxd, Mike Smith Film, as well as on my podcast at filmbook.com, where I podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gotham and Agent Carter and all that good stuff. You can also find our other podcast, The Complete Works, on filmbook.com as well. Thank you for listening to FilmBookCast. If you're listening to our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast, your email, and the title of your email. Produce so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us next week for a new episode of The Complete Works, in which Mike and I will be discussing Nicolas Cage's role in David Lynch's Wild at Heart. And join us in 2 weeks, where we'll probably be reviewing DC's attempt to catch up to Marvel in one movie instead of six. That is Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. You excited about that one, Mike?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like we were talking about earlier, I'm like, I have a low expectation for it, so that if it turns out to be good, I'll be surprised.
There you go. Yeah, I'm interested. Like, I was not a fan of Man of Steel. This is the sequel to that. But I do like Zack Snyder, and I think this movie feels like more unfiltered Zack Snyder-y, just like fanboyism. Right. All over the place, and it seems like it's much more his filmmaking style. I will just probably enjoy seeing these characters kind of play around together. So we'll see what happens. I think Jesse Eisenberg looks like he's having a blast, and I'm pretty excited just for that.
Yeah, that's going to be a really odd portrayal. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm eager to see it. And plus, we're going to have like the first live-action versions of Wonder Woman and Aquaman and all that stuff happening in this movie, so...
That's true.
Should be interesting. Should be of interest anyway. So that'll be a big review. Look forward to that. But until then, we are out.